This is Joe Bob Briggs, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling.
Much scrolling for March 15th, 2022. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Lucky the Leprechaun, speaking Latin, Steve.
I was really expecting you to say Brutus.
E2 Brute?
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. E2 Brute? Yes, it is the Ides of March. Everyone, beware the Ides of March. Don't turn your back on any of your friends. That's all I have to say.
Look out for the yellow moons and green clovers. Orange stars, pink hearts, Steve.
Yes, it is also St. Patrick's Day week.
It's Thursday, Steve. You planning on making a little, is it going to be corned beef and cabbage? Or is it bacon and cabbage, Steve? You never know. You never know. Is it American or is it Irish?
Thursday is opening night for my musical, so I will not be eating on Thursday.
No eating.
No, no time.
No, but you have a toga on today, Steve, and I do too. Hopefully it doesn't get too bloody.
Film at 11. Brings us to our Film at 11, our movie of the week. This week, Chip, there's a new movie on Disney Plus from our friends at Pixar. This one's called Turning Red, and boy, are there conflicting ideas about this movie out there.
What do you mean by conflicting ideas, Steve?
There are certain people that think that this movie is inappropriate for their young children, and this movie about turning into an adult, this 13-year-old girl turning into a giant red panda whenever she gets too excited, might be a metaphor for something.
Well, I guess it could be. I mean, it's rated PG, right?
This is a PG-rated movie specifically pointed to basically my students, the girls in eighth grade. This is a young girl in eighth grade, 13 years old, who wakes up one day as a giant red panda.
Steve, those are the mean years.
Yes,
those are the
they
mean
are.
Years. That's yes. Where mean girls are. So yeah, you can say whatever you want to. I didn't find the girls mean.
She is certainly not one of the mean girls, the main character of Turning Red. She is certainly one of the artistic souls in the movie.
She's a pleaser, Steve. She's a pleaser. She wants to please mom. She wants to please grandma.
And there's a lot of messaging there about honoring family and honoring tradition, and at the same time wanting to rebel and be your own person. The metaphor gets really muddled by the end of this movie, where there's a whole fleet of aunties that are also giant red pandas, and I don't know what that metaphor is at that point.
Well, they suppressed it, Steve. They suppressed what made them special to conform. And the daughter... It's the first generation. It's basically, you know, while this is a Canadian, it takes place in Canada.
Very Canadian.
This is very American, too, in the sense that this may be the first generation where young people can truly explore their uniqueness. And maybe that is the metaphor here, that they can be very unique and certainly... You know, if you had to describe it, maybe the 1960s was the last time we had this type of rebellious nature. Young people are uniqueness. I mean, Steve, they have different hair color. They pierce themselves different ways. They certainly have a very different way of looking at sexuality, much more open. So, I mean, I think this is not addressing those individually, but they certainly... This is a very different generation than previous generations, and it was shown in that type of situation where each of the previous generations chose to suppress the panda.
Yeah, suppressing the panda, I suppose, is a big part of the metaphor, suppressing that individuality. But the main metaphor that I got from it is this is adulthood. She's going through this change and going into adulthood, and to suppress that is a very, very muddled message, in my opinion.
All right. Well, it is a Pixar film. It is on Disney Plus. They were upset it wasn't getting a theatrical release. I can understand that, too.
Right. The people who made this movie were upset that this is not available at a movie theater because they don't see it as being honored, that their work is just, you know, online somewhere instead of having a huge theatrical release. I can totally see that. What's your chip score on this one?
It's 50 out of 100.
Yeah, I would say that this is one of those movies that is going to be easily forgotten. I don't think it has the same emotional oomph of many of the Pixar films before it. And maybe it's because I have sons instead of daughters, but my eighth graders, when I talk to them, I don't know that they're going to watch this movie and really acknowledge its message.
Well, those that like boy bands, Steve, should enjoy this film.
My artistic kids will enjoy it more than my Mean Girl kids, for sure. I got a chance to see The Adam Project on Netflix this week as well. That came out the same day as Turning Red. This is a time travel movie, Chip. Are you surprised?
You like time travel movies, Steve?
Have I mentioned in the last almost 8 years that I enjoy time travel? This is Ryan Reynolds traveling back in time to meet up with his younger self at age 12 and finding the adventure that comes with losing their father and finding him again in time and having all of the great adventures that come with childhood. Mark Ruffalo plays the dad. Jennifer Garner plays the mom. That might sound familiar to you because those were the stars of 13 Going on 30. This is kind of a reunion for that couple.
Well, it looks like, was it Bruce Banner and Electricity?
Finally, we get to Chip knowing characters instead of actors. How about Zoe Saldana? Who's Zoe Saldana, Chip?
I don't know.
She's from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, she is. Oh, wow. There you go, Steve.
She plays the love interest of Ryan Reynolds.
That's Uhura, Steve.
Oh, she's also Uhura. You are absolutely right. She's also Uhura. And then Catherine Keener is the nemesis in this story. This is a pretty middling time travel story. I would not suggest this to everyone. Those of you who love time travel stories as much as I do, you should definitely watch this one. Those of you who love Ryan Reynolds, this is a very Ryan Reynolds-y kind of a story. It's not a great science fiction story. There is no wonderful message. There's no metaphor that I can come up with for how future Adam and future Ryan Reynolds will fare. So it's fun. It's a fun little ride. Go watch The Adam Project on Netflix.
Well, you've been quite a busy watcher this week, Steve. Tell us a little bit about Shining Vale on Stars.
I suggest Shining Vale on Stars way more than I suggest our first two movies. This is a series. It is a very comedic drama about a family that moves to a small town after the mother of the story has an affair with the handyman. That... That leads to all sorts of situations, including this house that they move into being possessed by a ghost. This is Courtney Cox in the main role with Greg Kinnear as her husband. Sherilyn Fenn is in this as the real estate agent. Mira Sorvino is the ghost. And Judith Light is actually in this as Courtney Cox's mother. This is very funny, very silly ghost story with lots of adult situations. I suggest Shining Vale for those of you who have never heard of it. Go to Stars, which is complicated, and watch that one.
We're such a busy guy, Steve. You seem to have found another musical to watch that takes place in America.
You would imagine that I wouldn't watch TV this week because I'm so busy. But yeah, we spent a lot of time this week trying to decompress. And one of the things that I did was watched finally, the West Side Story from 2021. This is the Steven Spielberg directed. It's now on Disney Plus, and I completely agree with you, Chip. This is quite possibly the Oscar winner for 2021. The cinematography on West Side Story, the ability for Steven Spielberg to tell a story visually is on display here. He uses these amazing, sweeping camera movements to give us the impression that all of these things are happening at the same time, like they would be in a stage play, and it's a movie. Not big jump cuts, just sweeping movements of these huge choreographed dance scenes. I really enjoy this film.
And who can forget the message? There is a place for us. There's a place for everyone, mm-hmm. Steve. Mm-hmm. Somewhere. And
there are certainly people who didn't like that they changed some of the songs and some of the characters and some of the timing of those songs. I enjoyed this storytelling. It is definitely 21st century.
I think they should get an Oscar for best finger snaps.
Yes. The finger snappiest of the musicals, West Side Story, is now on Disney Plus.
Steve, maybe there's some people who like Jamie.
I watched the first two episodes of Outlander Season 6, the Doctor Who fan fiction turned wonderful time travel story. That's on Stars, and that's how I found out about Shining Vale, by the way. And the first two episodes of Picard Season 2 has all the nostalgia of Star Trek The Next Generation. I suggest those two shows highly. What have you been watching?
Make it so, number one. Make it so. Steve, I was Earl Grey.
Earl Grey, hot. There's a scene Picard. Where somebody brings him coffee, and he's like, what is this? And he's like, oh, it's coffee. And he's like, ugh, I don't drink coffee. I'm Picard.
Steve, I got to watch Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty on HBO Max. And this was an excellent series. They're only releasing the episodes one at a time. It's a 10-part series. It stars John C. Reilly. And it's about the part where Jack Kent Cooke, who was the owner of the Lakers, sold the Los Angeles Lakers of the National Basketball Association. And it was taken over by John C. Reilly's character. And their first draft was Magic Johnson, Steve.
Okay.
Magic Johnson. And Kareem, I always thought Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a real, kind-hearted person. In this film, or in this series, he's a very business-like person. And he's sitting back, listening to his, music of the time. This is certainly after the time that he went became Muslim. He went from Lou Alcindor to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And Irvin Johnson, who won a national championship at Michigan State, is going to leave school early, and he's being courted by the Los Angeles Lakers. And it is so far kind of joyous. It's a lot of fun. John C. Reilly's character talks to the audience quite a bit. They break the fourth wall. Hmm. You get a little insight. And I think this is lovely. This really should be a lot of fun. And you can watch it every Sunday night at 9:00 Eastern, or as they say, 8:00 Central, Steve. 8:00 Central.
There's times when TV shows are on? Is that a thing now? Oh, boy. I have to schedule when I can watch a thing?
If you want to watch it when it first is released, Steve, you have to do it. So far, this is very good. I recommend it. All right. It's for a grown-up audience.
Okay. I am intrigued by the idea of a dramatization of a historical moment. A lot of stars in that one. Even Sally Field is there as John C. Reilly's wife.
Adam McKay is the director of this. And Adam McKay ended up losing his friendship with Will Ferrell over this because Will Ferrell wanted this role that John C. Reilly ended up taking.
Hmm. Hope it was worth it. Opening this week, we'll see if there's any movies that are worth it. The first one is Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre. This is Guy Ritchie's latest run around, shoot things, and flip cars movie. Are you a fan of the Guy Ritchie movies?
Well, I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure this film is fine. But I watched the trailer, and I'm going, it's just a bunch of gobbledygook. And I thought Liam Neeson was going to star in it because they used a person with a certain set of skills, Steve.
Jason Statham, almost to Liam Neeson level, but not quite there. He can drive good, though. He's a good driver.
Steve, the next film that comes out this week seems to have an interesting twist.
I think that this might be the pick for the week. The movie is simply called X, just the letter X, and it's the story of a group of young filmmakers in 1979 setting out to make a pornographic film in rural Texas, and they find themselves in a situation where a horror movie breaks out in the middle of their pornographic movie. The message here is the very thin difference between pornographic film and horror film. I am intrigued by this film.
Interesting. Steve, we've got The Hater also being released this week.
So this is a political comedy, right?
It is.
A liberal environmentalist speechwriter goes on to run as a Republican, where she can pretend that she believes things that she doesn't believe in order to get a role in her conservative Texas hometown. Huh.
So that also takes place in Texas, Steve, which brings us to our next film, Uma.
Oprah? No. Uma. Uma, not Oprah. Uma! Sorry, that is a joke from like 30 years ago. You'll have to look that one up. This is the story. This is a very dark story. Sandra Oh stars in this one, and she is haunted by the ghost ? Of her estranged mother from Korea. Very, very dark analysis of family dynamics here.
Which also brings us up to this Twilight Zone type of a film called Alice.
Yes, I agree with you. This is very much a Twilight Zone. This is very much the story of The Village from M. Night Shyamalan. This is the story of a young lady who is a slave in the antebellum South. She escapes slavery to find out that it's actually 1973.
And this looks really good. Holy cow, this looks interesting. And Steve, which brings us to what Amazon Prime is going to offer us this week. There's a movie called Master.
Master. Two African-American women begin to share disturbing experiences at a predominantly white college in New England. Boy, we have some dark films this week.
All right, let's lighten it up. Bring us a little Disney Plus, Steve.
Good. The newest version of Cheaper by the Dozen is coming to Disney Plus this week. You might remember Cheaper by the Dozen, the Steve Martin version in the early 2000s, or the original in 1950. The story of a blended family of 12, which they're called the Bakers in this version. Get it? The Bakers, and it's Cheaper by the Dozen. This one is just for kids. I don't know that there's anything deep to this story. Just a lot of kids running around. I think the majority of it is Michael Michelle Harris, who is just adorable, and this is a real vehicle for her. We've got Gabrielle Union as the mother and Zach Braff as the father in this one.
It definitely looks like a movie for like the 8-year-olds out there.
Yeah.
Steve, this brings us to our final film this week. It's a cartoon version of Where is Anne Frank?
Yeah, this is a bizarre twist on the story of Anne Frank. This is the story of Kitty, who you might know as the imaginary friend to whom Anne Frank wrote her diary. This character is brought to life in this cartoon, and she's in the present-day Amsterdam looking for Anne Frank, wondering what happened to her, and finding out about her legacy that she left with that diary. That's interesting, at least.
And it looks like a hand-drawn animated film, not a computer-generated.
Yeah, I am intrigued by that one, at least.
Book it. Book it.
to our book it, our book of the week. Chip, you have been reading this week.
I have, Steve. There are these symbols that are on pieces of paper. And if you look at them, you can actually sound out different sounds, which make words. And it's incredible, Steve.
My favorite way of thinking of that is you are reading the mind of the author. You get to hear what that author was thinking because he wrote down these symbols on that piece of paper. I love thinking of it that way. You read The Seventh Property, Bitcoin, and the Monetary Revolution by Eric Yakes.
Yeah, I've read about 4 books on monetary history and what is money and all sorts of currency wars and all sorts of things. We may talk about more of them, but I found this one to be very, very interesting. Eric Yates put together a book that if I was going to discover, I mean, kind of do some research on blockchain, on Bitcoin, on electronic currencies, this is how I would organize it. And he did an incredibly generous job to organize it, like I said, like my brain works. So it's broken up into 2 parts. The first part is a history of money, like what is money? Banking, how did we start banking? How did they work? How did they compete? What are some of the shortcomings of bankings? How was it manipulated? Any number of things going on there. And then, from beginning of time all the way up to modern time. The second part of the book is a discussion of what is blockchain, how this is particularly Bitcoin in general, how this idea of electronic currency arrived, and sort of how to think about it. And how to think about how it could be used. And then he gives some critiques of it. So it really is a beautiful overview of some of the questions that a person who has interest in this type of money, banking, currencies, any type of question that you would have, this is a beautiful overview. This is highly recommended for those who have interest in sort of getting a grasp of that. And what else do you want to know, Steve?
So does he lay out a simple explanation of blockchain and Bitcoin? Can you put it into a sentence or two at this point?
Sure. There was a computer program that basically said there is only so much currency for the blockchain, and it will continue to be divided. There is a period of time that will be released. There are people who own this, and the idea is that you could transfer assets very inexpensively between one party and another, and I can't remember what the number was, but they transferred, I'm throwing out a number, I don't think it was $1 billion, but let's just say it was $1 million between one group to another group, across the world. The cost of it was like 68 cents. Mm-hmm. And the idea of being able to transfer value from one party to another for this inexpensive price seems to be much more modern than the previous version. If you've gone to a bank and you tried to wire money between here and a party outside the country or something like that, you realize it costs a lot, and there's all sorts of challenges to it. The timing is not as quick as you'd like it to be, and it just seems to be from a different generation. I can't comment on value, whether this will win or anything of that nature. But I can say that this gentleman makes a really compelling case. And it's really, if you have interest in learning about it, I would suggest that you do read it. Because once again, he really outlines the argument for electronic currency very well. And whether we choose an independent currency like Bitcoin, or we choose an electronic currency that's by the Federal Reserve, you can see where we will eventually move to this. Unfortunately,
that's become a big question lately with Russia and how Bitcoin cannot be shut down by any government entity. And with everybody sanctioning Russia, nothing can be done with their Bitcoin investments.
That may be true. But, you know, once again, that's independent of a government. And, you know, the question you'd have to ask is, should the government control a currency or not? Because there are incentives to devalue the currency. And he makes a nice case on how that has been exactly what's happened.
Does he go into any of the energy use that Bitcoin requires?
He does. And he talks a little bit about that. And one of the statements he said is, there are times that there are excess capacity for energy. So let's just say that you and I are, you know, we set up our computers by a, waterfall or something like that. Well, we can't use all that energy immediately. That could, you know, there are ways of making this more green. And yes, it uses a lot of energy, but, you know, a lot of things use a lot of energy. And there may be some benefits to allowing that to happen.
The question is whether the benefits outweigh the drawbacks of, well, just about anything, but Bitcoin in specific. The energy use is troubling. The amount of energy, there was a report that there was a raid that was conducted because there was a heat signature coming from a specific building, and they thought for sure that somebody was growing something inside of that building. And when that raid was carried out, it was found that the heat was just simply being created by all the computers that were mining Bitcoin. So there's some questions about that.
So do you think there's any green technology that could run a computer?
Certainly.
The idea is that the answer to it is that could be solved. But other things use a lot of electricity too.
That is true. The value of the idea of this currency is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, talking about in computer class. I really believe that what we have said on this show is that Bitcoin might not be the future of currency, but the blockchain might be the future of computing.
So I can't make any comment on whether Bitcoin will be a currency or not, or whether it's worthy or not. I do think blockchain will be something that we end up using. In fact, I was just at a meeting this week where I met with a gentleman who's working on blockchain. Mm-hmm. And his company, by the way, his name was Ace, just so you know, just so there's that. But anyway.
Batman's dog.
So we talked a little bit about, we talked a little bit about blockchain and sort of what it means and how it could be used and sort of how they're looking to use it. And he's an entrepreneur. Their company is getting ready to go public. It's certainly, you know, it's a fascinating time. This is, Bitcoin, but blockchain certainly is going to be revolutionary to how we work. I mean, it could be as revolutionary as the Industrial Revolution. Or maybe how computers have become part of our lives.
I would say at least as useful as the World Wide Web, which celebrated its 33rd anniversary this week. I think that it's going to change the way we move data.
So let me be very blunt about this. He makes a very compelling case. This is a strong argument. I enjoyed reading this. And if you have interest in this subject, this is a great book to start with.
All right. That is The Seventh Property, Bitcoin and the Monetary Revolution by Eric Yakes.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, as sad news to report this week, Chip, we said adios to Emilio Delgado, better known to most of us as Luis from Sesame Street. He was born in 1940. He was 81 years old. And I got to tell you, he changed a generation's worth of thinking. A lot of us are bilingual global thinkers because of Luis and Maria on Sesame Street.
Certainly. They were probably my first introduction to Spanish. I could be wrong, but I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there. And certainly Sesame Street being based in New York City, or a fake New York City, was a fascinating way of looking at the world. So he was definitely part of that, along with all the other character actors that certainly we grew up with.
Yeah. And they're getting older, Chip. They're all getting to the next level, and it's just sad every time we turn around and we see another one of those people whom we have just lost. It's something to think about.
81 years is a good life, Steve.
Yes,
and,
sir.
You know, the good part about it is it looks like there's opportunity that we could go in back in time and we could see them in their prime.
Time travel, back to time travel for a second. Sadness followed by time travel. That is the story of my life. Quantum computing, which we still don't understand, but is fascinating. Quantum computing may be the key to time travel. This week it's been announced that scientists have successfully moved one particle back in time by like a quarter of a millisecond, Chip. I'm excited about this. I love reading all of the articles that come out of the quantum computing realm. My computer class, we talk about the future of technology, and quantum computing will be as revolutionary as any other computing platform that's come out in the past.
And Steve, I should mention that the river in Chicago may still be green, Steve. We never know.
They
made it green last weekend. It's proprietary, by the way.
Don't you love that?
It's a secret on how they do it.
But it's wonderful that they do it. It is fascinating to see the city of Chicago come out for St. Patrick's Day and to see that emerald green river going right through the city. The satellite pictures of it are just stunning.
With the yellow moons, four-leaf clovers, orange stars, peak hearts. You can get on your lucky charm, Steve.
Not offensive at all. It's fine. We want to say happy anniversary to our other podcast, Sandwiches at Irregular Hours, turns 2 on Friday. The book club you've always wanted to be a part of, with Professor Pam Bedore and the two of us being just the dumb
Steve,
kids in
Steve,
class.
That's right. We're thought of as, you know, the remedial group that she has to bring up to speed.
We had so much fun reading through all of the works of Arthur Conan Doyle and a full year's worth of other wonderful authors. Go to sandwiches@irregularhours.com to go through all of those wonderful books that we went over. It's been 2 years. Time is so weird, Chip. It's unusual.
Well, you know, Steve, we start out with a pandemic. Yeah, you know, right now we're dealing on the verge of war. I mean, what can I say?
Climate change. That's what I can say. I can say climate change. Put that in the bowl with the pandemic.
It may be time to revisit some of those short stories we wrote, Steve.
Time to watch more Cheaper by the Dozen. Let's ignore all of the news. I think that's my advice for the day. Go watch more musicals. It is musical weekend for me. I look forward to showing off what my students have been able to accomplish this weekend. We're putting on Willy Wonka for our 18th annual musical, and it's wonderful and fantastic, and I'm exhausted, Chip.
Break a leg, Steve.
Thank you for knowing that. I appreciate that very much. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Not offensive at all. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Essenflo. We'll
see you in the future.
It's too brutal.